This is 5 weeks into the series called Risk. The tagline is Love Boldly, Magnify Jesus. Today's title is Risk to Be Unoffendable. We're talking about risk, and we are contending that when we do risk, there is potential to make a difference, because the opposite is this. I'm going to live in my sphere of safety, which I would say is an illusion in the first place, because nothing is 100% safe. But when we get out of that circle of safety and we say, I'm going to risk, especially on the road of love, I'm going to allow love to be the catalyst for me to do for so-and-so, that takes boldness to do that. I read a quote from author. Paulo Coelho, you guys might know him as the author of The Alchemist, and this is what he says about risk. It says, pitiful is a person who is afraid of taking risks. Perhaps this person will never be disappointed or disillusioned. Perhaps she won't suffer the way people do when they have a dream to follow. But when that person looks back, and at some point everyone does look back, she or he will hear their heart saying, what have you done with the miracles that God planted in your days? What have you done with the talents God bestowed on you? You buried yourself in a cave because you were fearful of losing those talents. So this is your heritage, the certainty that you wasted your life. Something to chew on? Do we hold on to life so closely that we will not risk loving, accepting those who are different, forgiving those who we must forgive? Or do we just go through life saying, I want to protect myself, I want to insulate myself? According to C.S. Lewis, our heart becomes dormant. It's kind of like putting it in a coffin, and it becomes unsensitive to everything around us. So we're saying in the series called Risk that risk is right, especially when love is the catalyst. So risk to be unoffendable. Can I ask, what things offend you? Do you get offended when you read something on social media and you take it personally and you're like, how dare they have that opinion? Do you get offended when things don't happen at the time that you want them to happen? And when I speak of being offended, according to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, it's feelings of resent and anger based on a perceived insult. Think about it. On a perceived insult. No wonder they said this. It's about me. And that's a whole nother issue when you think that life revolves around you and that people spin around you. Do you get offended in traffic because the person in front of you is going too slow? Wait, do you get offended because they're going too fast? You get offended when people give you advice? When your mom says, hey, sweetie, honey boo, baby, cutie pie, punk, you should do things like this, or I was thinking that maybe here's another option. Do you get offended by the comments you read in your news feed from the politicians? Does that offend you? Do you get offended when somebody asks you a question and you assume that you know the intentions of their heart? I have a friend who still says that he's offended because he walked into 7-Eleven one day and the cash register guy asked him, "How are you doing?" He says, "He doesn't care how I'm doing. Why is he asking me?" What things offend you? I'm going to ask that you would give me permission to speak into this today, and that the words that I say, that you would just be open to them and that you would not be offended by them. The Bible, which is our plumb line, right? You guys get what that means when I say that? It's what we go by. It's our straight edge, and that is what we base everything off of at Love and Motion. It's extremely simple because we value God and His Word and people. We don't have anything else shiny or pretty to offer you. The world has a lot of good, shiny stuff like that. I think that the more simple we keep it, the less sensory overload you have here on a Sunday morning. So here's our plumb line. What did Jesus say? And what Jesus said, we want to do as He says. And we don't get it all, and we struggle, and there are doubts and questions. But you know what? It's all good. I want your doubts. I want your questions. So the Bible, our plumb line, what we value as pure truth, reveals that Jesus is, in fact, the most unoffendable being. He is able to sit with people and have conversations with people, and He never writes anybody off. He's never so scandalized by them that He writes them off and says, "You're not worth it." So a question, wherever you're at in your spiritual life, wherever you're at, should we look more like our Father? Should we perhaps be less easily offended? It's a question. Maybe you don't agree. I'll respect that. Maybe you think we should be more offended. Maybe you think that by being easily offended, it's a good way to leave a mark on the city. But if maybe being so easily offended and overly sensitive to certain things, maybe if that doesn't produce the fruit and the love that it should produce in order to make a difference in the city, then maybe you'll give me a little bit of a footstep into your heart and into your thoughts this morning. Could we, should we look a little bit more like Jesus? Specifically, for the sake of today's message, in the category of offendability. And I would contend that we should live and do as He did. I'm going to share a story where we see Jesus having an opportunity to respond, right? And the context of this is Jesus sitting with His best friends, His disciples, His followers, His pupils, His students. That's like you and me. You're here to learn. None of us are experts. None of us in this room are spiritual champs. None of us get this completely. So His followers, His students, His pupils, His, "Hey, teach me." He's sitting with His friends and He's telling them, "Hey, you know what? Something horrible is about to happen. And this thing that's horrible is that I'm about to die, and the religious people of this area are going to crucify me to a cross. And where I'm going to go. You won't be able to be there because I'm going to die and I'm going to go to heaven and be with my father. So he's explaining these things to his friend over a meal with some bread and wine, kind of what we do towards the end of service with communion, a moment to remember. So there's a lot of intimacy. There's a lot of passion in that conversation. He's saying, I'm not going to see you anymore. And one of his disciples, a guy by the name of Peter, pretty brash guy, kind of has feelings and maybe not a lot of tact. He just shares them, which I appreciate. It's like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. And the context is that we're picking up there at verse 37 in John chapter 13. And this is Peter's response to Jesus when Jesus says, I'm going to die. See ya. I love you, but I gotta go. And I'm going to a cross. And Peter says, I'm ready to die for you. Jesus answers, will you really give your life for me, Peter? The truth is, before the rooster crows, you will say three times that you don't even know me. So if you've been around church, then you might know what happens. If not, let me fill in those spaces. Peter does eventually wind up denying Jesus. So Jesus is in a garden. He gets arrested by the religious leaders. They accuse him of blasphemy because he says that he is the Son of God. And the consequence is death on a cross. So they arrest Jesus in a garden. And when he's arrested, he's taken to trial and he's mocked and spit upon and tortured and his back is lashed open. And in the context of all of that, Peter comes back into play. And there are three different opportunities for Peter to, in a way, stand up for his friend Jesus, who he hung out with for 3 years. Like, they slept in the same place. They ate together. They saw people who were blind be able to see. They saw a guy who was dead and buried in a cave for a couple days. They saw him come to life, and they just experienced some ups and downs, some very intense conversations, a great friendship building on it 3 years straight. So where's the friend? I will die for you. Where's the friend? He's approached and he says, hey, do you know Jesus, the guy who's on trial, the guy who they're going to kill? Do you know Jesus? Do you know Jesus? Peter says, nope, never heard of that dude. Once. Rooster crows. Another situation. Hey, we've seen you with Jesus. You're his boy. For 3 years you walked with him. You taught with him. You guys are boys, right? Nope. Don't know that dude. Washes his hands clean. Happens a third time. Rooster crows. Peter remembers the words of Jesus. And what is the response from Jesus? Is he offended? So, Peter betrays him, right? Peter backstabs him. Lies. Hypocrite. How does Christ respond? Well, let's go to the next verse. And Jesus says tenderly, lovingly, says in John chapter 14, very next verse from what just occurred. Jesus says, don't be troubled. The audience is the guy who Jesus knows is going to betray him, because Jesus has foreknowledge, all knowledge, omniscience, knowledge of all. He knows that the guy who says is going to die for him is going to betray him. And despite that, the love of Jesus is so deep, the grace of Jesus is so wide, that this is how he responds. Not offended, but the exact opposite. lovingly responds and says, don't be troubled. Trust in God and trust in me. He's just connecting there that the Father and Jesus are one and the same. So don't get lost there. Listen to the first words, don't be troubled. There are many rooms in my father's house. He's talking about heaven. I would not tell you this if it were not true. Just confirming, hey, I'm not man. I cannot lie. I do not lie. I love you. I'm laying down my life for you. What I'm telling you is true. Don't read into it more. This is what's going to happen. I'm going there to prepare a place for you. After I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back. Then I will take you with me. Jesus isn't going to go build a hut with hammer and nails. It's just a way for him to describe the preparation is me going to a cross, dying, going to my Father and saying, that's my boy. I want him with me. So let's not miss what's happening here. Jesus was just slapped in the face with hypocrisy, lies, abandonment, and he's not offended. The catalyst is love in his heart, and he encourages Peter and the other disciples who are in that audience, in that room. He says, don't let your heart be troubled. You're mine. And there's a lot of beauty in this because he says, when I'm gone, that means I'm preparing a place for you, which means I'm thinking of you. And I'm going to bring you there. No passive aggressiveness, right? Pure love. You're going to mess up. So here, let me tell you something that you won't really know is an insult, but I'm going to say it anyway. No. I love you. And I love you so much that I want you to be with me where I am. Same place. It's here. I'm going to spend some time on this. The deep love that Jesus has for his people is what allows him to see potential in people. What if we saw potential in people? It's a question. Chew on it. Dig on it. Just don't be offended by it. What if we saw potential in people? Like, what if in all their brokenness, according to your perception, there's potential there? What if we knew how to give grace to people? What if we knew how to give a margin for error because people are broken and messed up and they will fail you, they will disappoint you? Perhaps I have already disappointed and failed you a couple times this morning because I'm broken and I don't have it all together, nor will I ever on this side of heaven. But what if we learned to give margin to people? What if we saw potential of what could be? My wife is an artist. I love her creativity. And I was thinking of in 12 years, everything that she's created. And everything that she has created has been because she has seen potential in it. Like twigs that are on the ground, rocks, pebbles, glitter, paper, and for sure hot glue. And she's able to create something beautiful. She created this piece of art that's on our wall at home. And the thing in the back is a piece of foam that a neighbor threw out when she was moving. She found a frame that was inside the trash bin of our apartments. A couple years ago, she had a friend give her a roll of velvet that was torn up and cut up in different pieces. Not a roll, like, here you go, like, I cut out a hole here, a triangle there, and here's a garbage, you want to use a poi? Yes! And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, don't put junk in that closet. A friend gave our kids a memory game. And in that memory game were little cards that you punched out. And she kept the frame of it. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, don't keep that junk. Don't put it in the closet. And for years, she's been collecting rose petals that I've given her. She dries them out. Because that's what kind of husband I am. Take notes. She takes all of this junk and she creates beauty. Several of you have been over our place and have seen it. The picture doesn't do it justice. She saw potential in the trash. Literally. She turned it into some kind of treasure. What if we saw people with those eyes? There's value there. 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 We are quick to point out the faults. We are quick to pull out the knife and cut deep with our words. Because we don't believe there's potential. But if Jesus is perhaps the least unoffendable being, and we are his children, trying to get what he says, don't really understand fully, but want to grow to be more like him, then we should be more like him step by step and breath by breath. Nobody's going to nail this down perfectly. Little baby steps, breath by breath today. Let me see potential there. He is a beauty expert. A little play on words there. He is the one who calls beauty out of nothing. Genesis 1, there is nothing. There is a mess. There is chaos. And he calls beauty into it. He is the one who takes ashes and he turns them into beauty. He is the one who creates streams of water through the desert. He is the one who takes a little punk boy who has a lot of other siblings that are better equipped, and he takes that little punk boy and he allows him to be king of an entire nation. And by the way, that little punk kid is the one who eventually commits adultery and is a murderer, and God sees beauty in that because he is a redeemer. That's the good news of Jesus. Not get your act together and then I use you. I see potential in you right now in the midst of all of your brokenness and all of your questions and all of your doubts and fears and anxieties. I see potential because my fingerprints all over you, says the master artist, capital A. Closing thoughts. Personalize them, please. Are you too easily offended? By the weather, social media, the neighbor, the pastor, the friend, the coworker, what you got in the mail from the mailman? You You too easily offended? You ready? I'm going to invite you. If you've been at Love in Motion, then you know what an invitation does, right? You get the right to say yes, no, and if you're that punk, then you say maybe. But most of you will say yes or no. So here's an invitation. Don't be offended by this. Get off of your high horse of moral superiority. We're easily offended because we see people as worse than us. We think we've achieved it. Here's the next part. You're getting off of that high horse of moral superiority. Stop and look in a mirror. I'm trying to communicate this with much love and tenderness. Look at all your failures. Look at the chances you've been given. Look at the grace that's been extended to you. Think about the possibility that there are many things that you do on a daily basis that probably offend somebody. Come to grips with how jacked up we are. That's not a bad thing. It cuts, though, because for some, we have spent our entire lives trying to build up things that give us status. I go to church. I know the song. I give the money. I signed up for that. I volunteer there. And junk means nothing. What holds weight is that God, the creator, the master artist, capital A, says you're mine and my fingerprints are on you and I created you and there is intrinsic value in you. We're on a level playing field, friends. The way he looks at you and says, my boy, is the way he looks at me. There is no high horse. We're a group of children who are broken in need of a father who has come to save us. That's the good news of Jesus. There is no qualification. There is no form to submit, and he checks off, puts it through the Scantron machine, and comes back and says, oh, guess what? You're not good enough. He doesn't do that. The reality is that we're all not good enough. So here, can I invite us all to repent of being too easily offended? Includes Poyo. Can I invite us all to ask Jesus for eyes to see beauty in people? Jesus, I've blown it. I'm so critical. Jesus, help me gracefully get off of this horse. Please help me, Jesus. As you go this week and you do life with the people in your circle of influence, the 5, the 10, the 1, risk to love and to be less offended. There is nothing in our lives, nothing in our minds that can separate us from his love for us. That's the good news. There is no go out and do more because he said it is finished. The good news becomes a stumbling block because we say, how can it be that easy? So all I do is believe. That's what he said, not what Poyo says. I love you right now where you're at. And I love you so much that daily I want to give you bread, aka his word, so that we start to mature every day. It's not, I'm broken, okay, no big deal, here I am. He has a desire to see you grow. Take a couple steps forward. There'll be steps back. But you take a tiny little bit step forward and we start to look like our dad a little bit more every single day. That's the good news. It's done. Fall into his arms. Help me believe. Help me in my unbelief. Jesus, thank you for your word. Use us to be city changers. Thank you for what you've done for us because you've accomplished it. We rest in you. In your name, amen.